Back with you folks to wrap up a busy week, Friday, January 22nd, 2021, right here on Connecticut Today. We talked about the future of the Republican Party and issues in Hartford in the 4 o'clock hour. Republican State Senate Leader Kevin Kelly of Stratford stopped by. And in the 5 o'clock hour at the top, Dr. Jonathan Wharton, political science professor, Southern Connecticut State University. What's the future of the GOP? John wrote a recent article about that in the Connecticut News Junkie and how difficult it is to be a Republican Party chairman here in Connecticut. Chris Caruso's on the phone for us. Maybe he can bring us back to earth here. Chris, how are you, sir?
Hey, Paul, how you doing? Good afternoon. Yeah, that was quite a word, I'll tell you. And some people are going to love it, and some people will make fun of it, I guess. You know?
He is going to, I can imagine what he's sitting in his office right now saying, oh, my God.
But I wanted to call you, Paul, about the convention system.
Yes.
When I chaired the Government Administration Elections Committee in the legislature, that was an ongoing debate, frankly. And I think the best we could do was to take the number from 20% of the convention to 15% of the convention as far as endorsing candidate. Now, it only applies really for the governor and the constitutional officers.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
You know, this, right. All the state reps, the senators, all the local positions have automatic open primary systems.
Yeah.
So they'll get an endorsement, but the candidate could then run the primary. And you could do that even with the governor race as well. You could, if you don't garner the 15%, then you have to go out and get so many signatures to have a primary. But it's a Herculean task in many ways. Joe Ganim did it with Lamont, for example. Lamont won the convention, and Joe Ganim went out and garnered enough signatures, over 20,000, in order to wage a primary. But it's just a more difficult task to do.
The other thing, Chris, that makes me scratch my head here as a head scratcher is the fact that in Connecticut there are separate races here for the governor's seat and the lieutenant governor's seat. And I know a lot of states, just the way they do nationally here for president and vice president, you have a ticket. But was there any serious discussion, Chris, when you were in the legislature about just having people run on tickets and forget this, you know, this second race for the lieutenant governor's seat? Because that always, to me, Chris, that appeared to me to be almost a shotgun marriage kind of thing.
Yeah, no, and you know, Paul, I believe as you do, it should be a combined position. You know, if you're voting for one, then you're going to vote for the other one. And usually on the line, you'll have the governor's name and you'll have the lieutenant governor. And people will vote usually that line because they're supporting the governor and they'll support the lieutenant governor. And there was always discussion about it, Paul. But it was very funny when it came to conventions and primaries. There was always a reluctancy to change statute. And
of course,
I think what it was, they were all incumbents, you know, so they were afraid that it may work against them. I used to have this discussion all of the time with them. And even dropping the convention from 20 to 15 was a major undertaking. So there's never the desire to change the statutes because there's always this fear that if I change it, it gives an advantage to my opponent, which often is not the case. I've seen that happen so often. I always said to other elected officials, the only way you lose is when you do a lousy job.
Yeah.
You know, you don't represent your people. You don't return phone calls. You're not out in the community doing things. You're not introducing legislation to help your constituents. That's when you lose. And 9 out of 10 times, I think I've been proven right on that. That assumption.
Listen, if state rep or state senate member, if they, you know, return those phone calls, like you said, and it doesn't have to be a big thing, about some school wants a new playground, they want state funding for that, or some town wants funding for its Little League complex, maybe for lights. If you come through on that, no matter what party you are, you know, it's like my father, my father always told me with our family store, he didn't spend money on advertising because he said, my advertising is my customers, and that's it.
Yeah.
And that kept people coming in the store.
You know, Paul, politicians, the position is very much like you see your pharmacist, for example. You go in your pharmacist, you trust them, they help you out. You know, I remember the day if I went to my pharmacist and I couldn't pay that week, he would say, come in next week and pay it, things like that.
Yeah.
But it's a trust you build up. And frankly, if a politician doesn't have the decency to call their constituent back, that constituent remembers that forever. I don't care what it is. Many times you can't help a person. You call them up and their problem, you just can't help. But as long as you made the call, for example, you know, I got more support from people because I would put up a stop sign or I put up a street light or something of that sort, which to you and I may not be major, but to the person experiencing the problem, I just gave them $1 million, you know?
Sure.
And that's what people remember, are those little things that help you to get reelected again. It's that simple.
Absolutely.
At the end.
No, I was going to say, Chris, I do have to run. I appreciate the call.
Yeah.
Thank you, as always.
Okay.
Former Bridgeport State Rep, Chris Caruso. Chris, good to hear from you. Have a great weekend.
You too,
folks,
Paul.
It's thanks, Chris. We had Vin Candelora on earlier a few days ago regarding the apparent move again to extend the governor's emergency powers. He will have a 72-hour window to do that, I believe, starting on February 9th when that happens. And I wanted to have the state Senate Republican leader, Kevin Kelly, on the show here in the afternoon, along with his usual visit here in the morning now to WICC, because, I don't know, last time we read that the Republicans may not have been consulted on this. So let's ask Kevin. Kevin, it's Paul here. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Paul. It's always a great day in the greater Bridgeport area when it's a nice Friday on a sunny day.
There's no better place on the planet, Kevin, or in the universe to be than in Bridgeport and beautiful Fairfield County. I'm telling you, you're right on tap there.
I agree with you there.
So I talked to Vin earlier in the week because I wanted to find a follow-up on something that was reported, I believe, in the Connecticut Mirror, that you folks on the Republican side have, again, not actually been approached or been brought into the process here, unless that's changed, about the governor possibly, and I know the Democrats say it's, they don't know how long for, Kevin, but possibly requiring or asking for another extension of his emergency powers. What's the latest on that?
You know, things haven't changed. I haven't had the opportunity to sit down with the other leaders and the governor, just like, Vin Candelora reported. And this is why, under single-party rule in the state of Connecticut, it becomes an echo chamber, is that the Democrats believe that the only voice in Connecticut that should be listened to is theirs. And unfortunately for them, and for Connecticut, this is our history, this is our culture, is that we are the Constitution state, which is the government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And what that means is that our government is not wired or built for single-person rule. It is built for all voices to be heard. And because of that, and because on January 6th we did open up the General Assembly, those voices need to be at the table, and it needs to be all voices, not just Democrat voices.
Is this, and I'll ask you this question, if you feel it's uncomfortable, I apologize, but is this just a way, Kevin, do you think that the majority Democrats are kind of punting here and saying, listen, we know these are difficult issues, but let's have the governor decide it. He's the top dog. This is what he signed on for. We don't really want to wade into these waters if we can afford not to do it. Is any of that in play here?
Well, you know, I'm not privy to the conversations that the Democrats are having, so I don't really know. But, you know, looking at it from the outside, I could see where one would get to that point. But the fact of the matter is, once again, we have representatives who get elected to go to Hartford to do a job. And we're supposed to do that job, and we want to do that job. I know on our side of the aisle, we want a seat at the table. We want people in our district's voices to be heard. And so we need those voices to be heard. And if they don't want to be the people's voice, then that's something they're going to have to deal with come 2022.
All right, let's talk, Kevin, about some specific things. I know you guys and gals in the General Assembly are up and underway and running as best you can. I've been seeing some of the hearings that have been underway. Thank God for C-SPAN. We sorely need it. For CTN, our state-level C-SPAN. We sorely need it. I'm seeing these hearings going on virtually via Zoom and everything. How have things gone so far, do you think?
Well, I had serious concerns, as our entire caucus did, with regards to the rules and how the legislature was going to conduct its business. On one hand, it was good to get some of the people's voice at the table, in the sense that it's going to occur in a virtual capacity, because up until January 6th, it was just the governor. Now we have some of the people's voice. But by doing things virtual, you are limiting the voices that are privileged enough to have the capability to do that, whether because they can afford the technology or because they live in a part of Connecticut that actually has connectivity to the web. And so we need to move forward mindful that not every voice is at the table. I mean, this is kind of what happened when schools got shut down and many kids, like those in Bridgeport that didn't have the computers, weren't able to, zoom into their classroom and get their constitutionally guaranteed quality education in Connecticut. I'm, a little bit surprised that the Democrats would want to move forward and, quite frankly, bringing up fairly controversial bills that, in prior sessions had thousands of people show up at the Capitol. And my question's always been, well, where do thousands of people congregate in the virtual world so that that voice can be heard?
I did notice, Kevin, that one of the first bills that there was a virtual committee hearing on was the elimination of the religious exemption now, which, of course, is top of mind because of COVID-19. Do you think there is the will on the majority side, because they can do this if they want to, is the will there to pass this bill and have the governor sign it?
Well, clearly they're putting it in and they want to move forward, and you have the leadership of the committees seeking to do that. Paul, I will tell you that it's one thing when you show up at the Capitol and you have to walk through thousands of people who might be either for you or against you, and sit there in a public hearing and listen personally to the stories, versus not having to walk through that and see and feel the people's voice. And I think when you go to this virtual world, it's a lot easier to be against someone. It's just like, you look at what happens on social media. It's easy to say something bad about somebody from a distance. It's another thing when you have to say it to them to your face, because you have that human interaction. Well, if you take that out of the process, many of these legislators aren't going to feel the palpable power of the people. And I think that's a part of the First Amendment that was necessary. It's what our country was built upon, and it needs to be part of this process. And we shouldn't be moving forward with such controversial legislation that people disagree with. I mean, this week, for God's sakes, we heard the new president talk all about unity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, unity doesn't occur when you do things that are controversial and you exclude voices. That's not unifying, but that's what's happening in Hartford.
Kevin, finally, I'm reading more and more here. It certainly sounds like it's going to happen. I know the governor was very specific about 2022 and taxation, the legalization for recreational use of marijuana. Is there a concern? Because I've talked about this a lot on the show, Kevin, and I've cited examples over the past few days from Massachusetts and from California. Is there a concern, Kevin, up there, that overtaxation, I mean, adding level and level and level after level of taxation on legal weed, is only going to actually increase the black market, as we've seen in some other states, that is going to be fed by people who just want to buy some off of people who can afford to pay the taxes, and a lot of people just don't want to do that. I mean, is anybody considering this?
Well, I don't know if the Democrats do, but I know we do. And you see unintended consequences of their actions. I mean, just look what happened with the, no pun intended, the dime bag tax on plastic bags. Now you have a dime on every bag.
Yeah.
And that's what happens here. And sure, I'm sure the black market would flourish. But what I laughed about this week is these same Democrats are talking about, oh, we got to ban flavored tobacco and flavored vaping products, but we want to legalize, because, you know, we're going to legalize marijuana. And it's like, wait a minute, you don't want to bring kids into something that they shouldn't be doing, but then we're going to legalize a controlled substance. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to middle-class families. And I think the more Connecticut hears about how their policies don't make sense, it's going to resonate. And the middle class, I think, is going to have something to say about
that. Kevin, let's make sure that we pass laws that prevent tax-paying adults who can make decisions for themselves, who happen to like maybe some different kind of flavored tobacco. You know, you can't twist their arm to stop smoking. So you're right. Let's deprive them of a flavor of tobacco they like, even though they're tax-paying citizens, and let's legalize something that many scientists say is still deleterious for people, Kevin, up to the age of 25.
Right.
Unreal.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
It literally doesn't. Kevin, thanks. We appreciate it. Stay in touch. Have a great weekend.
Hey, sure.
And we'll talk down the road. Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it.
You bet, Paul. Take care.
State Senator Kevin Kelly, Republican Stratford. How does that make sense? And he's right. How does that make sense? We have to ban flavored tobacco. Well, come on. Stop. Because you know what happens? You ban flavored tobacco and somebody buys it and sells it on the black market. Always happens. Just a very thought-provoking piece the other day, and we had calls on it earlier today, the general subject, of when you get outside the local cities and towns here in Connecticut, some of which are governed very well by Republicans, what is the purpose of the statewide Republican Party as to any further gubernatorial races or even constitutional races? And now the party again is without a state chairman. Joining us right now to talk about his piece in the CT News Junkie. Check it out, ctnewsjunkie.com. Dr. Jonathan Wharton, Political Science Department, Southern Connecticut State University. John, hi. How are you, sir?
Paul, doing great. I didn't even know you were going to talk about my op-ed. Boy, I'm glad somebody's reading about the Connecticut Republican Party out there.
Well, no, I saw this, and I actually brought it up earlier today, and I had a couple of callers say, you know, thank you, because again, now, John, as you point out, the party is without a statewide chairman, and people should know you've been active in the party before on a local level. Boy, John, is there a more, and I hate to use the word thankless, so let me put it this way, is there a more thankless job in fundraising than the chair of the Connecticut Republican Party?
Especially when your salary is tied to it. I mean, that's a difficulty in all this, which I had raised. And even Jay Romano, who resigned, obviously, this week, said the same thing. It is a very difficult task to be in that position. And I can only imagine what he had faced.
The Republican Party, John, is the party that is positioned not just here in Connecticut, all around the country as, okay, forget our social issues. We will at least watch the books. We will at least be better stewards of your tax money. And Lord knows we have spending problems in this state. John, you've seen it for years. I have as well, with all our legacy costs and everything. Yet there is this inability, I guess, of the statewide GOP outside of local cities and towns to, I don't know, John, you tell me, get that message across, to have voters buy into that? I don't get it.
It's a multi-layered process, which is what I was trying to bring to the front. The media loves to point at Trump. Great. Let him be the boogeyman for all the problems that exist in this world. But it's a bigger issue in terms of before Trump was even president, that there were a lot of internal dynamics and problems that existed at the state and local level that we just won't acknowledge. When I mean we, I'm including party leaders, voters, and, certainly the media.
You know what else came up the other in the show, John, is and I had calls on it as well. The rumbling again, if you get beyond even the fundraising, how the things operate, how the parties operate, especially the GOP. You know, should we get rid of, for example, should the Republicans get rid of the primary and just go with the convention, or vice versa, get rid of the convention and go with the primary? Because those two entities, John, you know as well as I do, they have banged heads in the past. What do you see as the future for that, if anything can change?
Well, this is exactly the reason why I brought up everything in that op-ed. I say put everything out on the table. I'm not saying it's one answer. I'm saying there are multiple strategies and ways in which the party could tactically address this. And by the way, as much as we'd love to blame the, say, party or, say, central and the local Republican town committees, the truth is any of these reforms, including whether we decide to allow for open primaries for people who don't have an affiliation with the local party, has to be inclusive of the Democratic Party. The way that the parties devise the system here politically in Connecticut is any actual reforms to take place, especially between the primary system, the convention system, has to allow for both parties to be on the same page. So I'm not just excluding the Democrats. In fact, I'm blaming a lot of the Democrats,
yeah,
even in the op-ed on purpose, because I don't think many voters know we have to have Democrats at the table to make any of these actual changes.
So obviously they may, John, take the old political tact of keep your mouth shut if you see your enemy destroying him or herself, right? They may just sit back and say, no, we're just going to sit here and watch you.
Actually, they have been for a long time. And I think that's what this thing that really kind of crushes me. And I'm not just saying it's a Republican, but I'm saying it's a lifetime nutmegger. I would love to find a pathway of reforming the actual system. And I'm not saying that open primaries is the answer, but boy, there are a lot of unaffiliated voters out there, Paul. You know that. They're the majority of voters in Connecticut.
Yeah. Yeah, people think, John, you know, they always think, John, and the guest is Dr. Jonathan Wharton of Southern Connecticut State University. A lot of people, John, don't realize how many unaffiliated, don't have a party label on them, voters there actually are out there. But I wonder, John, how many of those people are actually, I've always wondered this, unaffiliated, when they know how they're going to vote, but they just don't want to put a D or an R next to their name for whatever reason?
I think it's more than we'll ever acknowledge. And there's this mass confusion out there that there's a similarity between independent and unaffiliated voters.
Yeah.
And in truth, they're two separate categories. Then you throw in, as you already know, Paul, all these people coming from New York and over the border who just don't want to go for either party. And the numbers we've seen recently in terms of people buying homes has been tremendous because of, you know, COVID. And younger people. There are entirely too many younger people who are not affiliated with the political party. And that's been the bane of my existence as a professor. And you know, my students will totally attack me in classes saying, we hate both parties. We hate them both. Well, guess what? So do I. So guess what? Sign up for a party, get involved, get engaged, and participate in the primary since we're a closed primary system in Connecticut.
You know, finally, John, for the money woes, is the state GOP going to have to find, I hate to use the term here, but is the state GOP going to have to find just some sugar daddies and sugar mamas and just, you know, these people maybe out of Fairfield County, maybe out of Litchfield County, over in the other Gold Coast in Niantic, who can write fat checks? I mean, is that how you solve the problem here, at least in the short term?
That's what's already happened, right? I mean, Linda McMahon, you know, certainly Margaret Stryker. I mean, go down the list. Tom Foley, there's so many. So the truth is that, you know, that's what's gotten us over for, let's say, the last decade or so. And I'm not saying that still has to be the case. Maybe it will have to be. But my biggest concern, and as I mentioned in the op-ed, is there had to be a lot of looking in the mirror and a lot of internal forms of the state party system, the apparatus, and, as I said, getting the Democrats on board to allow for more reforms to take place within our party system.
And, you know, John, one thing before I let you go that's always upset me, and I am a registered Republican, people know that, is the inter-party squabbling we have here of somebody that, yeah, okay, maybe this Republican can win a statewide race in Connecticut. And then you have the purists, John, who don't realize that this is Connecticut and not Alabama. This is Connecticut
exactly
and not Mississippi. And it just, and I see this on Facebook and on Twitter and on Instagram. Right. It's like, what are you doing? Take the gun out of your mouth. Do you understand what you're doing here?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You hit it right on the head. It seems as though in Connecticut, it's all about the litmus test. You know, how devoted are you as a party leader, party official, right? And so this litmus test could come down to how many generations are you Republican? How long have you been in Connecticut? Were you a Trump supporter or not a Trump supporter? you know, do you hate the governor and how to hate the governor? I mean, all these dynamics just creates.
Quantifiable level do you hate the governor?
Exactly. You know, let's pin the tail on the donkey, not the Democrats' donkey. Maybe we should. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's got to be a strategy of saying, look, we need to find a pathway of not even so much working together, but be the power broker that's necessary for a party leader, like the chairman position or chairwoman position, and everybody else to be on the same page.
John, every Sunday, millions of people watch the NFL, okay? And I keep telling people this. The Democrats understand that you may not like everybody else in the locker room, but when you take the field, you've got one goal, score more points than the other guy. And, John, it's just something that I Republicans take those locker room squabbles onto the field. They do it every time.
Yep, they do. And you have to understand, for me, as a voter, as a follower, as somebody who writes about this, and, even behind the scenes, it's been frustrating me for way too long.
Oh.
I wish I had a game plan to deal with that on the field.
Well, John, when you come when you become chair of the state Republican Party, oh, I'm sorry.
No.
Boy, no. I got the big negatory on that one, didn't I?
I'll never be a coach. I'll always be, you know, a fan in the field out there in the sands, at the very least.
Dr. Jonathan Wharton, political science professor, Southern Connecticut State University. Check out his op-ed, State Republican Party Chair Vacancy More Than It Seems. John, always good to talk with you. Take care. We'll talk down the road.
Thanks again, Paul. Take care and have a good weekend.
You too. Dr. Jonathan L. Wharton from Southern Connecticut State University. State Republican Party Chair Vacancy More Than It Seems. Folks, I'm telling you, that's it. That's why it's astounding to me. Whether it's on a local level in a town or a city or a state level or even a national level, it is, say what you will about the left in this country or the Democratic Party, I give them credit. They coalesce together. They leave the locker room squabbles, the arguing, the throwing of chairs, the screaming at each other. They leave that in the locker room. And when they come down the tunnel and go on the field, that's it. It's a unified effort. We score one more point than the other guy. Republicans don't often act that way.